You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Drs. Laura Japsikas and Anna Hood about their experiences with maternity leaves in their practices. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Laura Japsikas grew up outside Philadelphia, where she enjoyed riding hunters and jumpers. She received a bachelor's degree in biology from Cornell University, where she was co-captain of the equestrian team. Dr. Japsikas then attended veterinary school at the University of Pennsylvania. After receiving her VMD in 2004, she did an internship at Haggard Equine Medical Institute, followed by a three-year residency in equine internal medicine at the University of Florida, and board certification by the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine. Following her residency, she stayed on for several years as a member of the faculty. After several years in private practice in Saratoga Springs, New York, she joined Rhinebeck Equine, where she is a partner. Outside of work, Dr. Japsikas enjoys riding, hiking, kayaking, cooking, and traveling. She lives in Red Hook with her husband, David, their two sons, and assorted adorable pets. Dr. Anna Hood grew up in Cincinnati, where she was involved with horses since childhood. After completing her bachelor's degree in animal science at Purdue, she graduated from Purdue University College of Veterinary Medicine. Dr. Hood also attended the Integrative Veterinary Medical Institute and is certified in equine veterinary medical manipulation, also known as chiropractic. She served on the Practice Culture Subcommittee for the AEP Equine Veterinary Sustainability Initiative and is very passionate about improving equine practice. In her free time, Dr. Hood enjoys riding and showing her horse Jigs, a sassy Connemara Thoroughbred Cross mare, and spending time with her husband, daughter, and son, as well as their dog and cat. Welcome, Drs. Japsikas and Hood.
Thanks, Dr. Grice. Thanks for having us.
So glad to have you here today. You know, as practice owners and mothers, you've both taken your own maternity leaves, as well as managed employees who have taken or will take maternity leaves in the future during their careers at your practice. Dr. Japsikas, what is your strategy for managing leaves, both your own in the past and now for those working at the practice?
So I took my leaves quite a while ago at this point. My youngest is turning 9 next week. But for me, they were very different because my first leave, I was an associate, and my second leave, I was a partner. I'm also an internal medicine specialist, and my first was born in foaling season, and my second was born in the fall, which was a lot easier to manage. So my first leave, I took 6 weeks off, and I was very determined that I would come back right away, and it was spring, and go right back into it. I did end up going into labor a week early, so I ended up taking 7 weeks off, which was fortunate because I did end up having a C-section as well. And it was really, really tough going straight back into it in the middle of foaling season with an infant. But at that point, I was also trying to build my caseload at a newer practice for me. And so I felt like professionally it would be hard to take time off. And we had some locums cover the internal medicine cases for me during that time. But I did not receive any other compensation other than the New York State disability compensation, which is quite measly, which is generous. For my second, who was born in the fall, I was a partner at that time, and I did not have any locums come in. I did start doing some management work pretty much right away. And then I would just come in periodically to see cases. It was just easier. While I did have a C-section again for the second, it was easier because I knew more what to expect, and it also wasn't the springtime, so it was a little easier to manage with less official coverage, the role I was in at that time.
It's so amazing. I was going to say, it's so amazing how, like, with your first child, I felt the same way. Like, I just, I'd just go right back full bore. And I was the first one who'd ever had a baby in the practice at that point. And you just kind of do it. And it's hard. It's really hard.
And then you think after how crazy it is.
Right. When you have the second one, you're like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. It was tough physically as well, which, yeah, I mean, my first was a C-section after 28 hours of labor, which is very different from a scheduled C-section physically. So, but now for our current associates, we do have, and employees, we do have paid bonding leave coverage. And the way we do that is New York State has changed what they do a bit since I had my leaves. And now we as employers pay in to a state program that then helps to partially fund leave in addition to the sort of short-term disability from the state. And so what we do is we take that amount and then we supplement the rest up to the associate's base pay for 6 weeks. So they can end up taking 12 weeks of paid leave. The amount they get for the first 6 weeks is actually less because that's what they have to use their short-term leave from the state first, which is a little backwards, but that was the best option we came up with at the time. And so now they can take up to 12 weeks of leave. The other thing, though, with that particular plan is that it does allow them to, if they're not taking the full 12 weeks at the time, they can take some of those days, hold some of those days back for doctor's appointments and sick leave and things like that to take care of the baby after they go back to work, just anticipating that they'll have additional needs. So that has worked out pretty well for us. We've only had one associate take advantage of that so far since that plan has been in place. But it did work pretty well.
That sounds so good. And you're among the 11% of equine practices that provides some form of paid maternity leave. Kudos. Kudos. That's fabulous.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
Dr. Hood, during your recent pregnancy, you lost an associate that you had hoped would help, cover all the work during your leave. How did you handle that difficult situation? It must have been, just like going, oh my God, what am I going to do?
Yeah, that was really tough. So we were a 3-doctor practice, and when I had my first 4 years ago, we were also a 3-doctor practice. It was more like, 2 plus my mentor who was half retired, but he helped plenty during maternity leave. So nobody was like, left alone during when I was out the first time. And then for this time, so it's the fall, and one of my associates comes to me and says, she's leaving at the end of the year. And I am due January 10th. So that is very unfortunate timing for me. so luckily, there was no, big you know, blow up or anything where there was a bad relationship. So she actually did stay on as relief through my maternity leave. So I was very thankful that we did have a good relationship to do that. So she stayed on one day a week during my maternity leave because I thought it was really important that my remaining associate at least still maintained her full day off, completely unplugged from the practice. I've been lucky that both times I've fulled out in the winter, and I'm just a general practitioner where usually winter is the slowest here in Ohio. So that worked out at least. So it was going to be the slower months anyway for when my remaining associate was going to be left alone for the primary caseload. That was also the push I needed to get involved with a emergency co-op with another practice, because then, you know, that was my other worry. It wasn't so much the primary caseload, since it was the slower time of year and I did have a bit of relief work with the previous associate. It was more, I did not want her to have to do all of the emergencies like a solo practitioner. So we set up with another local practice to do an emergency co-op that I've been hearing so many good things about, but I thought I didn't need it because we were a three doctor practice. But we did that starting January 1st. So that was a little bit stressful getting it off the ground, like right before I was about to have a baby, but everything went wonderfully. And so, yeah, if anyone's thinking about doing that, I would say just go ahead and do it sooner rather than when you really need it, because you never know what might happen. So we're, you know, most of the year through with that, and it's been going great. And then we just had to like adjust the schedule to make it fit. You know, I wasn't going to run the associate ragged just to get everything done. You know, some people just had to wait, and I told her, you know, just do what you're comfortable with. You can say no to whatever you feel like you need to say no to. I took 8 weeks fully off, and then I came back part-time with for the additional 4 weeks. And in my head, I was always thinking, oh, with my second, maybe I'll be lucky enough to take 12 weeks because, you know, it's going to be my last baby. I want that extra time. I've got two other associates. I think I can swing it. So, but then, you know, that all changed with the new, all those changes. So I did end up still going back at 8 weeks like I did with my first. And then I did the same thing where I was part-time for an additional 4 weeks and then back full-time at 12 weeks. Both times I took maternity leave, I was the owner of the practice. So blessing and a curse, I can, you know, take as much time as I need, but you kind of, you know, have to be back at a certain time, and all, some of those admin things still kind of creep in. And then, you know, there's not like true paid maternity. I mean, I could pay myself, and it's not quite the same as like a paid maternity leave for an associate. So yeah, those are my experience with both of my maternity leaves and kind of taking care of a curveball that came in there late in the game when I was, just a couple months from being due.
Now, what do you think you would do maternity leave wise if your associate had a baby?
Yeah.
Have you thought about that?
Yeah, we have a policy for 8 weeks paid leave. We don't have a state program that subsidizes yet. That would be awesome. But and then additional 4 weeks can be taken either unpaid or part-time or whatever the associate might want. That is, no one has done that yet, but that is what I kind of just decided on and went ahead and put in our handbook for the future.
You know, that's...
Can I just...
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sorry, Amy. I was just going to add that for our ambulatory associate who had a baby last fall, we did also... While we have multiple ambulatory vets who share call, we did find someone to cover meet some weekends so that there wasn't a huge uptick in the number of weekends on call for the three that were left to rotate through the on call. And that worked really well. I mean, we just sort of lucked out with the timing with somebody that was transitioning between jobs and was local enough to come to us for a weekend without it being too complicated. But that worked really well so that the workload didn't increase dramatically for the rest of the crew.
That's such a wonderful thing to do, because there, you know, it's so hard if a resentment is building with, and sometimes there Absolutely. Are people who they're not planning on having a family in it, and they start to feel like there is sort of some inequity between, you know, that people that have children get a better deal, sort of, and they have to pick up the pieces. So nicely done. Yeah. I love hearing that. So, Dr. Hood, what are your thoughts about the importance of paid leave of some kind for associates? Because I see that you're offering that, and I believe it's one of that it is important. Tell me what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I think it's just really important. And for me, you know, I wasn't so much thinking, can I afford to offer this? I just came at it from a different thought process of, I want to do this because I believe it's the right thing to do. So how do I make that happen? So it's like, you know, just like any other decision, I kind of am working back from the goal. I'm like, okay, I want to do this. And I think that this should be available to my associates. So how can I make that happen and work backwards from there? Just because I thought it was really important that was an opportunity for them to be able to take.
Yeah, good strategy. How about you, Dr. Jeffsikas? How did you get there?
Yeah, well, I think we took a similar approach philosophically, and we just really felt like we wanted to be able to sort of allow people to have the time they needed to recover, you know, physically, mentally, in all ways, and hope that they, when they do come back, they're able to come back in a more productive way, even if they're not productive financially, but productive for the practice, and able to, even if they're starting back part time, just to be able to come back in a better state than if they were forced to come back when it was too early for them. And I think it really just sort of sends the message that you value them and their life outside of the practice. And hopefully that translates into people staying in the profession and staying with you as an employee.
Yeah, exactly. It's wonderful to see more and more practices sort of understanding babies are babies for a pretty short time, and there is a disability of pregnancy and delivery that needs to be acknowledged. So I'm so glad that more and more practices are recognizing that. How do you think practices can best help new mothers stay in equine practice, Dr. Jeffsikas?
I think a lot of it comes down to communication and making sure that all parts of the team are on the same page, whether it's the receptionist scheduling appropriately, not piling on appointments as soon as the person comes back, the other associates on the team or the other veterinarians in sharing the workload on the team to make sure everyone sort of is on the same page about what that person is going to want to do when they come back, if they know. And I think that's a huge thing that everyone needs to understand too, is not everyone, you never know what delivery is going to be like. You don't really know, especially with your first, you know, what you're going to want to be doing in that first period after birth. So I think making sure that the messaging is clear to clients is really helpful too, so that they know what to expect, know that that doctor is coming back, but have a good team in place to take care of them while they're gone. One thing that we did with Dr. Rosenbaum's maternity leave last year that seemed to work pretty well was, for some of her bigger clients, there was another one of our other veterinarians was sort of assigned as their primary go-to while she was out. And everyone, the client and the veterinarian that was helping out, understood that they were filling in and they were there to help while Tara was out, but that when she came back, those clients would still be hers. And that helped sort of alleviate her stress about losing clients either within the practice or outside of the practice as well. And it also took the pressure off when she did come back because people were comfortable with other veterinarians. So they weren't quite as insistent that she be the one to come see their horses, which also made it more flexible for her to come back starting on a part-time basis and then maintaining a 4-day work week rather than 5. So it sort of helped to set people's expectations appropriately for when she did return as well.
You know, you made a comment that about you sort of don't know what's going to happen. And I think that that's something that is so true. I mean, a baby could end up in the NICU for a little while, or, you know, the mom could have a complication and not, you know, be healthy right away. And so, you know, when you're talking about setting expectations, I think you're just spot on with setting the expectation that we don't really know, and we're going to be flexible and open to it, right?
Yeah. And I think for us, giving those clients a plan was very reassuring to them. So they didn't feel like they were being abandoned.
Yeah, absolutely. And just being like not knowing who they were going to see and seeing somebody different all the time.
Right.
What about you, Dr. Hood? What do you think are ways that practices can help new mothers stay in equine practice?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the schedule and that it's going to be different for everyone. And for me, it is, you know, different with each child, you know, having one versus two, and just having that flexible schedule and knowing it can change in different seasons of life. So continuing to check in, you know, not just when, you know, it's a newborn, but, you know, young kids are still a lot of demand outside of work, and kind of checking in with those new mothers throughout those first few years still and beyond. So, you know, in the past few years, there's been like the big push for the 4-day work week. And I did the 4-day work week for, you know, I started it a few years in, and then I did it for several years up until actually this year. And then I actually switched back to the 5-day work week, which seems counterintuitive. But for me, the 4-day work week just wasn't working anymore. Working till 5:30 or 6, and by the time you get home and make dinner, once I had the 2 kids, it just didn't work for my life anymore. Even though I gave up like the full day off, I switched back to a 5-day work week, but a shorter day so that I am hopefully always out the door by 4. And I kept one day as office admin. But being able to pick up my kids from daycare and then make dinner and have just a bit more time in the evening for me personally was worth it as opposed to the 4-day work week. But that does not mean that for the next person it's going to be that way, because for me, I loved the 4-day work week for many years. So it's always just going to change. And, you know, at some point, I'll probably want to go back to the 4-day work week. Who knows? But for right now, I just really need to be home earlier in the day with the 2 kids and the schedule that we have right now, and where my husband works in relation to daycare and everything with just commutes and all of those life things. That's what works best for our family at this time. So I think just maybe not deciding for people what schedule might be best, really asking them and making sure they know that, you know, if this is a really good employee that you want to keep, telling them we can make whatever work, you know. So obviously, if you're going to drop from full-time to part-time, some adjustment and compensation would need to be made. But there's just so many options. It's not just, you know, are you full-time or part-time? It's what schedule do you want? And then we just figure out everything from there. Because I think that's just the best way to keep everybody happy.
I can't imagine saying to myself, I'm going to be done at 4. and actually being done it for. Like, I felt like once I arrived at work that I had no control over my day and that it would just snowball. How are you doing that?
Well, it's a work in progress. It is not perfected yet. Definitely not. Right. So, and a lot of it is, you know, you still have to poke the office and say, hey, so remember I'm supposed to leave at 4. Maybe we need to actually reschedule some appointments on this day. Like, so I haven't been afraid to actually like reschedule things instead of just suck it up and do it. Because otherwise, like, you're just never going to get off on time. So we, if I'm scheduled to leave at 4, I am expecting to do appointments until 2. And then I have 2 hours of buffer for maybe an urgent care add-on or, you know, maybe I just started catching up on paperwork and that kind of thing. So I can't really be booked solid until 4 and expect to leave at 4. We all know that's not going to happen. And it's definitely still a work in progress at this point. Because it's as new, you know, we haven't had like a 4 p.m. cutoff for any of the doctors before because the other doctors are on the 4-day work week, 8 to 6, 4 days a week. So trying it out. And I'd say it's getting better with time, but not quite perfected yet. But I am for sure a lot happier than I was on the 4-day work week and getting home later and really not having hardly any time before bedtime with my kiddos.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes a whole lot of sense. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, Dr. Hood? Things that people should know?
I think, you know, it is also worth it to have a conversation with your associate if you are planning on maybe starting to offer maternity leave, and just have a candid conversation about why you're offering this, because you think it's the right thing to do and you just believe that, you know, women or whoever is having a baby can have that time to bond. So I think them knowing that you're investing in them as a long-term employee because you think they're really great, I think goes a long way for that goodwill. And so having a conversation so that they know that and you're not just doing it just to, you know, look good or whatever. You're like, I'm doing this for you because I value you. I think that goes a long way.
Good point. I like that idea and that approach. What about you, Dr. Jeffsikas?
I think those are great points. I was just going to jump on briefly to the 4-day work week conversation because one thing that we've done for quite a while now, unrelated to maternity leave, but that helped in that situation as well, is that we have an assigned daytime on call person. And so everyone knows the sort of the one day a week, what it is for us right now, that they may get stuck much longer. And that has helped for the ambulatory doctors with young children, because then they are able to make childcare arrangements based on their schedules. And so the other days they do have more flexibility to be done at a specific time if they need to be to get kids from school, daycare, whatever the case may be, because as Dr. Hood said, you know, it's a continuously changing ball game with kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else, advice wise, you'd like to add?
Not that I can think of. I think just to emphasize the open communication with everyone involved on the team.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad that just to see the changes that are coming in the industry and the practice owners like the two of you that, you know, and your partners, of course, Dr. Jeffsikas, that are just sort of embracing the fact that our, you know, the majority of our early career veterinarians are women now, and women often have families, and we need to deal with it in a positive and, you know, sort of supportive way, rather than looking at it as a sort of an affront to the running of a practice. It's, you know, it's a way when you treat somebody well with regard to starting their family, I believe that it really engenders people having some gratitude and loyalty, and, you know, they appreciate that kind of consideration. So thank you for all you're doing for early career veterinarians. I'm loving it. Thank you for joining us today, Drs. Javsikas and Hood. And thank you all for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change.